Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. The Seattle Seahawks lost by a score of 27-24 to the Denver Broncos in Denver. It was a really weird game. It really didn't have any rhythm, and it's just a really weird. I can't think of any other word to say but weird. Recording live after the game. So it's just instant reactions, basically. But before we start talking about the game, a quick intro. I'm Grant Goldberg. I co-host this Locked On Seahawks podcast and do social media work for Lakers Silver Screen and Roll site for SB Nation. And Spike is a writer with The Stranger. But we're going to get into just the main takeaways right after the game. Spike, what was the biggest thing that you saw from the Seahawks today?
The line play isn't good enough on either side of the ball, but I think the bigger issue is the defensive line. The offensive line was bound to struggle in this matchup. They're A, not a great unit, we know that, and B, Denver's very good up front. We saw Von Miller take over the game at points, and really he was the difference in this game. But given how good Von Miller is, I thought the offensive line played acceptably. This was sort of like an average result given what we know about them and given what we know about Denver. The other side of the ball, we didn't know that much about our defensive line, but we know that Denver doesn't have a world-beating offensive line. They're probably going to be a bottom 10 unit this year, and we got no pass rush. We got no pass pressure at all. And we got, I believe, 5 or 6 hits total on Case Keenum. We still managed to get a 15-yard penalty on one of those hits. We got 1 sack. That's not good enough. That's not a base from which a young defense is going to have a chance this year. I think there are other takeaways too, but I'll just say right now, the trenches ain't good enough if the Seahawks team wants to compete for a playoff spot in a stacked NFC.
Yeah, you mentioned it in a young defense, and I'll use that to describe what the defense looked like today. They look like a defense without that experience, that playoff experience, the championship experience, and you know it really showed in Shaquem's play. It really showed in Trey Flowers' play, and it was just like the biggest thing the Seahawks had going for them. Defensively was Case Keenum throwing the ball, and at the same time the biggest Achilles heel was not being able to get pressure on Case Keenum and allowing these, you know, 7 or 8 yard passes just to kill them, and then not tackling after these, you know, short passes like the Philip Lindsay touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, the Broncos were able to get some rhythm on offense. Both Lindsay and Freeman went 71 yards on 15 carries apiece, which is like a weird symmetry. Neither of them had any explosive runs either. So they were just consistently getting pushed, except for a stretch in the third quarter. Keenum had the 3 picks and the 1 sack, but his overall line of 25 for 39 for 329 yards and 3 touchdowns is not terrible. He's Case Keenum. He's going to make mistakes. We've got to be able to capitalize on them. We actually did capitalize. When we got turnovers, we scored points. When we avoided turnovers on offense and were able to pin the other team deep, when we were able to pin the Broncos deep with Michael Dixon, who looked incredible. He looked incredible. Yeah. They didn't score points. So when we were when things were going to plan, everything was fine. The problem was, again, holding penalties, jumping a false start from Jermaine Ifedi. I mean, it wasn't like last year where it was every snap there was a flag on the field, but there was just enough. And we just don't have those margins right now. We don't have the talent level. And we don't have the team speed is the other thing. You could see when Earl was off the field, the secondary lacked the team speed. I thought Shaquille Griffin looked pretty good overall. He got beat a couple times. He's not peak Richard Sherman by any means, but he looks like a good cornerback. Trey Flowers, I don't know yet. I mean, he's young. He's not pedigreed. He was acceptable, but like Dante Johnson's on the IR.
Yeah.
Trey Flowers is going to be playing snaps. And Akeem King was the first guy off the bench when he got hurt. Akeem King, who we talked about looking decent this preseason, but was a guy we wanted another year on the practice squad to develop before he started seeing game action. He wasn't just seeing like special teams action. He saw defensive snaps today. So like, yikes. And then we were rotating Earl Thomas off the field.
Yeah.
And I get that it's hot and I get he wasn't back, but it felt like some nonsense punishment that really cost the team. It really cost the team points. And I really felt like it wasn't competing at the highest level to take Earl Thomas off the field for, I think, like 14 snaps. Like, their yards per play was like triple what it was when he was on the field. I mean, they just gashed us
the field. And the thing was, the team couldn't afford to bring him off the field, and they did anyways. And yeah. the two drives he was off the field, the Denver Broncos scored touchdowns. And,
yeah.
you know, it's you know debatable on that second Demaryius Thomas one, whether his foot was in bounds. But at the same time, they were on the goal line. It was first and goal.
Yeah, it was first and five. I just want to be clear. That was a bad call.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. If that was on fourth and five, we could talk about that changing the game. On first and five, I mean, sure, we could have still stopped them, but they're at least getting three. I don't know. You get where I'm at.
The difference.
I don't want to blame the refs for this loss. The refs weren't good. The Seahawks shot themselves in the foot.
Right, you know, I was just going to say, the refs, you know, they made some iffy calls on some plays, but overall, the Seahawks were worse than the refs. And, you know, it's disappointing to see this result, given that, you know, they had the capability to win this game if they just did a few things differently, like keeping Earl Thomas on the field, and like Russell Wilson not running 18 yards backwards and taking a sack. Because that's something you can't do, especially if, you know, your offensive line isn't going to be consistent and there on every single drive. And so for Russell Wilson to use a term that you just said, to shoot himself in the foot and give up even more yards when you're talking about a third down play or setting up third down, it's just not going to help you win the game. I know that his escapability and the magic that he works is such a big thing. It's so integral to this team's success. But if you think about it, you know, he's been in the league for a while now, and there's enough film on him to show defenses, okay, he's going to spin out of this right here. He's going to try to flip the field right here. And so they're going to be prepared for that. And maybe not the average defensive lineman, but especially a guy like Von Miller, and especially when Von Miller is going up against Jermaine Ifedi.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Don't spin into Von Miller against Jermaine Ifedi. Don't do it.
No.
Just don't do it. That's crazy. I will say this. Like, Michael Dixon changes the equation on those, especially on third down, which is basically like we're pinning them deep wherever we are on the field. And so that means that if we're going to lose an extra 15 yards on third down, it's not going to be 15 yards coming back the other way, which is nice. That was something I hadn't realized would be an extra Michael Dixon factor, which is that he sort of mops up for the specific ways in which Russell Wilson makes mistakes. So that's like a nice thing that'll be true about this team for the next, hopefully, half dozen years with the two of them here or whatever. So that's a positive. And also, like, look, we lost by three.
Yeah.
We missed a field goal twice. You know, they had a questionable touchdown. There were some, you know, they got a little bit of home cooking. We were up pretty late in the game and had a chance to make a couple third down stops, didn't do it. But like, you know, we got the ball back with a minute left and a chance to drive down the field. We immediately couldn't have choked harder. So it feels, especially given the way the game ended, how poor the team looked at the very end of the game, it really was a very sour note to leave on. Like, we're so used to Russ giving us a chance there, giving us a ball into the end zone, maybe making something happen, and he didn't do that, and so that felt pretty bad. I don't know. Like, this team is what I thought it was. To me, you go on the road, you lose to the Broncos by what the line was. This wasn't a great Broncos team, but again, they played okay. I don't know.
It's a tough place to play, too.
This is a thing that happens when you're a 7-9 team and you're young. And, you know, that's what I think this team is. What I need to see is these young guys get better. And I need to see Russ play better. And we didn't talk about that SI article, and that's probably the last thing we're going to talk about before we hit a break and then break down the game in a little more specific detail. But that SI article had to be brutal for Russ. You know what I mean? Like, the subtext of a lot of it was these Hall of Fame guys who have, or All Pro or Pro Bowl guys who left the team. They left the team because they didn't respect Russ. They didn't like Russ. And he's the sort of guy who wants to be liked. Like, clearly, he hosts the war shows. He's got Jimmy Fallon's personality in public, which, you know, whatever. He's a good quarterback. That's fine. But it's had to be a tough week for him. And he seemed a little in his head. And it doesn't shock me. It doesn't shock me that going on the road, playing in a loud, tough environment, playing at altitude, playing with, you know, like, doesn't shock me he underperformed a little bit. I don't know that it was the media stuff, but, like, that is a tough pill to swallow for us. He's got to put this game behind him. He's got to put that stuff behind him. And he's got to look sharper next week against a Bears team that ain't bad.
Yeah, and I would go, you know, as far to say, too, when he snapped out of it today, when he was being decisive with what he wanted to do with the ball, rifling it in there to Brandon Marshall, having really good touch on that touchdown to Brandon Marshall, and then hitting Tyler Lockett in stride off of his double move against Chris Harris when the safety broke down towards the right sideline, that was really good from Russ. That's the Russell Wilson that we were used to seeing, used to watching over these last years, and especially last year. And so to see that in part, you know, it kind of makes this game even more disappointing because it's kind of frustrating seeing him being able to turn it on in specific moments rather than the whole game. And that can be attributed to a guy that's a little bit in his head.
Yeah. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Look. Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break. We're going to have some great ads and some products you should buy. And we're going to be back right after this. Week one, Seahawks lose. This is the Locked On Seahawks podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Seahawks fans, if you want the best online betting experience, go to mybookie.ag. They have a quick, easy payout system. They have a simple interface. It's easy to use. And if you use the promo code Locked On, you get 100% back on your first deposit. mybookie.ag.
Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. We're recording right after the Seahawks 27-24 loss to the Denver Broncos. And if you guys listen to this podcast, you know that, you know, I try to be a little bit more optimistic. I'm a little bit more hopeful when it comes to this team. And it frankly sucks after, you know, watching a game like this to, you know, go back and look at what the team did wrong. But, you know, there was room for improvement. There was some things that Seattle could have done to win this game. It was a winnable game by all means, even in a tough place to play like Denver when it's 88 degrees in altitude. But, you know, for me, and we kind of talked about this earlier, like having a guy with Michael Dixon, it's almost like it doesn't matter where you're on the field when you have to punt the ball because he's going to put your defense in a good position. And so, you know, maybe with a little bit more time from the offensive line, the Seahawks really have to be aggressive in how they move the ball. And, you know, they try to have those, you know, long developing plays where they take shots downfield and the time wasn't there. But they need to keep their foot on the gas pedal, and maybe they need to work some quick passing into their game, not just these weird screenplays that they really didn't have any success on today, but they need some quick passing to really set up those deep shots, aggressive plays down the field, especially when you got a guy like Dixon who, you know, affords you the opportunity to place the other team wherever you want to place them.
Sure, yeah. I mean, look, it's... Well, we've talked a lot about how Pete Carroll wants to get back to his fundamentals, and that gets caricaturized as he's going to run the ball to the expense of the rest of his offense. When you think about what Pete Carroll's offensive philosophy really is, it's grinding the ball, it's running the ball, and then it's hitting on explosives, winning the explosives battle. And that really feeds into Michael Dixon. It also feeds into some of what we saw today in this game, where those little margins were there where this game could have gone differently. I'm going to talk about a couple of them real quick. One is Brandon Marshall had a touchdown called back early in the game that we had to turn into 3 points on a close offensive pass interference. Similarly, yeah. Chris Carson had a big play called back for a hold on Sweezy that was within the realm of affecting the play, but didn't look like it was necessary to spring Carson, if that makes sense.
There were other guys that could have blocked him, the defender
coming
in.
And then you look at up and down the big plays this team made, the big hit to Will Dissly, the big hit to Tyler Lockett. The explosives are still there on this team, even though the skill position guys aren't big names, aren't great guys. We were still hitting explosives. And so that tells me like something was working. The thing that wasn't working was the consistent rushing. And a lot of that comes down to Rashad Penny looked dreadful.
Yeah.
Okay, that's one side of it. The other side is Broncos really good run defense. Really good run defense. Top five unit last year. No reason to think they're going to regress significantly this year. So, you know, okay, we got to give Carson the ball more. Well, he fumbled, and so you end up giving Penny some extra snaps because of that. That fumble was because Von Miller, who is arguably one of the three best football players in the world, took the ball away from him. Think about the fumble Earl Thomas caused on Todd Gurley last year in that Rams Seahawks game that was
Yeah.
the difference in that game. Just because a great player makes your running back fumble on an incredible play doesn't mean you should go away from the running back who is grinding you out yards. If the Rams had gone away from Todd Gurley last year in that week, I mean, he ended up almost being an MVP. I'm not saying Chris Carson is Todd Gurley, but you got to give the guy who's hitting on explosives a chance to play, and the guy who's getting any sort of push a chance to
Well,
play.
he hurdled like him today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. That play that he. I mean, again, Carson had multiple explosives from a running back. He
Yeah.
looked good. When was the last time we saw multiple explosives from a running back in a game? The
Yeah.
answer is maybe Thomas Rawls, but it's really Marshawn Lynch. Like, I don't know. Like, this game was bad, and there's some really fundamental stuff, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that's bad. But there's also the seeds of this team overachieving its overall talent level. The offensive line is not great. The skill position guys aren't great. Russell Wilson didn't play great today. The offense still put up 24 points, and it could have been more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was frustrating, but I'm not mad. I don't know. What
Well,
do you have?
here's the thing with me too. It'd be unfair of me to not mention how good Chris Carson played, aside from the fumble, how good Will Dissly played in that first half. That really, you know, gave the Seahawks a chance to win this game. It set them up for you know, the second half. But to me, I completely agree on your stance about Chris Carson because I'm of the mindset where you can't just put a guy in a doghouse because of one play and hurt your own team's chances by not putting the ball in his hands again. Now you should have trust in your players. Maybe, you know, Chris Carson has lost the ball a little bit too many times between the preseason and this game, but when he's what's working for your offense and what and he's setting up, you know, play action and looking downfield to the tight end, now you have to go back to that.
Yeah.
And for him to be so explosive, literally explosive off the ground to where he jumped over another human being football player and landed on his feet and ran for about 12 more yards. And the thing is, like I get that football is a little, not a little, really old school in the fundamental values and how you're supposed to play the game and, you know, what's right and wrong. But, you know, at a certain point in time, that has to change. And a coach like Pete Carroll should know when to keep going to a guy, even when he, you know, loses the ball to a player like Von Miller. I
Yeah.
just
Well, and to be fair, they did go back to him
right.
later.
And
You know what I mean? They
yeah.
gave and they were already switching Penny in and out. I don't think this is a running back by committee situation right now, and I think that's what you're saying as well, that it can't be.
Well, no,
Even
yeah.
though Carson had the ball. No, I'm just I think we're agreeing that, like, even though Carson had the ball security issues, he's the guy who's got to be getting the bulk of the snaps.
No,
He's the guy
he
who's
was the
got
clear-cut
to
number
get it
one.
the bulk of the carries. He looked better. His hands looked okay. Yeah, I think, I don't know.
Well,
We should talk
this is what I
about,
was
we
gonna
should
say
talk.
too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Please.
No, I clearly think that he should be, you know, getting the bulk of the snaps. I even went as far as to say that I'm getting mad when he's not the guy running the ball. But you know, especially in a time, especially with the Sports Illustrated article out with, you know, maybe Pete Carroll favoring Russell Wilson, like going back to a guy when he makes a bad play, that's gonna do, you know, good for his confidence. And it's how you show a guy that, you know, you know, trust him, and that's how you build locker room chemistry too. That's how you know, continue to build on your relationship with a coach and a player.
Yeah, I guess. I don't
It's hard to talk. It's hard to put a lot of things under a microscope when the game just happened, and you know it's a game that they could have won that you maybe expected at a certain point to win, but you know they lost, and you know there's stuff that they could have improved on, but that there's always you know 15 more weeks for them to play football.
Yeah, and I again, like, this was not a good loss, but I also don't think it means that the Seahawks are going to be vying for the first overall pick in the draft.
No.
I will say, man, oh, I just want to come back to the defensive line. Frank Clark had the one sack, but he was otherwise invisible. Deion Jordan, you know, they had to rotate him. He's obviously coming back up to speed, but he had a bad penalty. I mean, soft, but they're making that call. They're making that call all over the league. And yeah. I saw way worse penalties this week in other places. So the interior, other than Tom Johnson, Thundergun Dundee, what's his name? Sebastian Thunderbucket. Thundergun Dundee is Michael Dixon, of course. Tom Johnson looked good. Jaron Reed didn't really have an impact. Nas Jones seemed to be a healthy scratch, which shocked me. The D-line just didn't look right.
Yeah.
The linebacking core, Kalitro and Shakim, neither of them looked ready to play. Mingo was forcing the coverage a lot, which is just good scheming by Denver. But,
right.
You know,
it's not where you want them.
Yeah. Coleman and Shaq. I mean, Coleman and Shaq looked fine, but not great. The safeties looked great. Our number one and number two, but our three and four didn't look good. And Trey Flowers, I mean, like, you go around that defense, and it's not ideal. And so my big question going forward, can we get pass rush? Is there anyone on this team who can rush the passer from the edge? Is there anyone who can bend the edge? Did Rasheem Green show up at all today?
No.
I don't think he did. And that's the guy. That's the only guy I think has the physical skill set and the rawness where I'm like, over the course of this year, that's a guy who could get a lot better and we could get a lot better results. I'm disappointed he didn't hit today, but he could hit in the future. And if he does, we're going to be getting different results.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And yeah, it's you know two different elements of the game, too. It's the interior rush needs to get a push. The run defense looked fine at a lot of points in the game. It's just, you know, the lack of outside pass rush is caused no sense of urgency from Case Keenum, and it allowed him to make these throws that won Denver the game, and he still put the ball in Seattle's hands and they capitalized off of it. I don't know, man. It's still a tough loss.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough loss. But you know what? I think there's some positive stuff that we can come back from one more break and we can talk about as we look forward into next week. What did we like this week? What do we think we carry forward into the next week? So a little bit of positivity from Grant and Spike on the Locked On Seahawks podcast coming back right after this Locked On Podcast Network. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we're going to shift the focus a little bit away from today's game, going into next week on Monday Night Football against the Bears. And you know, the biggest thing for me is building off of this running game's performance. I'd say that it wasn't, you know, lights out from any guy except Chris Carson, but it's better than probably all of the performances from running backs last year.
And 100%.
So you have to build on top of that, and you have to run the ball against the Bears and not put your quarterback into this same situation where you have a Von Miller-esque guy, a guy who can shift, you know, the total shape of the game, and Khalil Mack going at your quarterback a lot of the time. And you know, I'm fully on board that, you know, passing is more efficient, it's more vital to success in the game, but you know, you need to go away from that sometimes, as funny as it sounds, and build on top of performance. Keep giving the ball to Chris Carson, and you hope that Rashad Penny makes a difference. You hope that you can integrate CJ Procise into the game and get a good mix of run and pass from him. The Seahawks targeted running backs a lot today in the passing game, and so they need to keep working on that and integrate those short, quick passes into the game if they want to have some success against a good Chicago Bears defense.
Yeah. Yeah, I when I think about this game and what we want to carry forward, it's on the other side of the ball. And we haven't seen Trubisky this year. Obviously, that's coming in a couple hours. You'll have seen it probably by the time this podcast is released. Grant and I are recording right before Sunday Night Football. But the thing that I think is that given our opportunistic defense, we saw three interceptions today. We know Bradley McDougal, Earl Thomas, Shaq Griffin are capable of taking the ball away, having those huge momentum change plays at any time. We know we've got a few guys in that secondary who can do that. We know Trubisky is still green. He still hasn't started a lot of games. For me, it's about we got to cut down on the turnovers on offense. We can't have any, I'd argue. You don't want to have any because we want to be pinning them deep. We want to be giving Trubisky long fields because long fields mean more opportunities for Trubisky to mess up. And I think that that is how we win that game tomorrow. And I mean, again, it comes back to the special teams. It comes back to Michael Dixon. It comes back to Janikowski. It comes back to we can't miss a 40-plus yard field goal because that gives the other team great field position.
Yeah.
We can't, you know, like we can't do that. And so we got to be smart in the special teams. And I think that we saw the seeds of something kind of amazing in the punt game today. I mean, what Dixon did was wild.
Phenomenal.
And there was room for more. You know what I mean? Like, he could have been even better. He had one bad punt, you know, and he still averaged 58 yards a punt. Like, that's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And so you do that against a guy like Mitch Trubisky, and you really give yourself a chance to win a game even if you're outplayed. Then if Russell Wilson plays great, you have a chance to blow the other team out of the water. You know what I mean? So, like, this was a game where we could have won. Russell Wilson didn't play well, and a couple breaks didn't go our way. That's kind of a classic Seahawks early season road loss that this team has had as long as I've been alive.
Yeah, and 27-24
in Denver, week one, quarterback ain't playing great, not everything's working, we keep it close, we aren't there at the end. How many times?
I was going to say earlier, it wouldn't be the Seahawks if they didn't struggle early on the road in the season against a team on a hot field, and especially in altitude. We've seen this so many times before. And, you know, this is not saying, oh, they're going to be the same team they were in those years, but, you know, it's something that's not unfamiliar. Another thing to me that's going to be big for the Seahawks going into next week is, especially with the absence of Doug Baldwin, who has a sprained MCL, and I can't believe we haven't mentioned that at any point in the show today, is Brandon Marshall is going to be really important going forward. I think we saw that a little bit today, that Russell Wilson really trusts Brandon Marshall. He targeted him more than any other receiver, and he produced. He trusted him, throwing it into a tight window, throwing it over the top. And so I think Brandon Marshall is going to be Russell Wilson's go-to guy out of that receiver group. But, you know, clearly he trusts the tight ends, too. And Will Dissly is going to have to continue to build on top of that. And it's going to be a lot to ask of him to be that primary receiver tight end. But he showed the capability to do it. And I'd like for him to be involved in the offense a little more in the second half of games. I mean, 100 yards in the first half ain't so bad. But, you know, continue to have an impact in both phases, in running and passing, and on the offense for Will Dissly.
Yeah. And I'm going to so I think that the last thing we should hit are the injuries from this week. Doug Baldwin's got a sprained MCL. Not going to keep him out for the year or anything, but that's multiple weeks on the shelf. And we know he was already talking about how he's only going to be 80 to 85% going forward. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. Jerron Brown, Tyler Lockett, Brandon Marshall, and Will Dissly, those, and potentially Ed Dixon going forward, but let's take that out of the way. Those four guys, Marshall, Brown, Lockett, Dissly. Those are four solid, interesting, complementary pieces. None of them is a bell cow. None of them is an every down. You know, none of them is Antonio Brown. None of them is Doug Baldwin. None of them is Julian Edelman. None of those guys is a guy who in the year of our Lord 2018, you can throw at 15 times a game. I mean, Brandon Marshall, Lord knows, used to be that guy. Tyler Lockett maybe could become that guy.
Out of the guys in the group, he's the guy that could potentially,
But he and Jerron Brown are both more stretch-the-field options. Brandon Marshall's more of a big-body option. Like, we know what these guys are. And that's a problem. That's going to be a problem for the next couple weeks. That we don't have that guy. And we're going to have to get frisky figuring things out. Can David Moore take a big step forward? I don't know. can we really scheme the running backs open in the passing game? We were able to get some decent stuff to them today. Our team's going to catch on to that. Are they going to be like, well, they don't have Doug Baldwin. Let's key in on that. Let's not let them do that. Can we answer that? You know, it's going to be a bit of a chess match from here, and we're down our bishop. You know, like, yeah. It ain't good. It ain't good at all. The other big injury, it looks like Bradley McDougald is hurt.
Yeah.
Patella tendon injury, they're not saying, not the way like Jimmy Graham's, they're not saying a torn patella tendon, so don't freak out,
It has the potential, though, to be a big injury.
Yes, if he's not on the field, Delano Hill's a big step down. We moved on from Mo Alexander to Shalom Luani step up. I'd like to see it. I'd rather see it than Delano Hill. And then can, because he can't put Tedrick Thompson and Earl Thomas on the field together.
No.
We don't have the physicality there. So we got to figure it out, baby. We got to figure it out.
Yeah, to build on top of your point surrounding the Doug Baldwin situation, you have these guys on the roster, and like you said, there's no bell cow. But if Russell Wilson finds a proficient way to spread the ball around and not favor, you know, one or two guys like we've seen him do in the past sometimes, then we'll be in decent shape. I think David Moore has some potential to bring something to this offense that we obviously didn't see anything from him this week because he didn't get any snaps, or I didn't see him get any snaps. And we also have a guy like Keenan Reynolds on the roster who fits that Doug Baldwin prototype, but obviously he's not Doug Baldwin. So Russell Wilson needs to, you know, spread the wealth around and not make sure the ball's in any one guy's hands too often, or a defense is going to key in on that. And so you got to get these guys in a rhythm, get these guys contributing, and take the focus off of just one guy, so, you know, the defense, you know, has a lot more to deal with. It sounds like a simple concept. It sounds too simple to work, but, you know, I think that, you know, when you're involving a lot more guys in the offense, especially if you involve the running back group too, then the defense is gonna have a lot more to worry about, rather than, okay, Doug Baldwin's on the field, we gotta, you know, make sure we manage him on third down. If you have all these guys contributing on the offense, you know, there's no one guy the defense can key in on, and it allows more people to contribute.
Yeah, and if they don't contribute, we still got Michael Dixon.
Hey, we got Michael Dixon, baby!
Michael Dixon, baby. All right. Okay, so, you know, that's probably going to do it for our sort of immediate reaction. We're going to come back with a deeper look pod. That's probably going to come out Tuesday. A little bit of Carrollology on that. We'll be talking press conferences. We'll be able to look over some of the tape, be able to give you a bit more of a deep dive. Then we're going to have a crossover episode with Lauren Cox and Locked On Bears. Those guys, he's great. I was on their pod a couple months ago. Really, really smart guy, really knows his stuff, so that's going to be a treat. Then we're going to be previewing the game end of the week, get you back out there for another big NFC showdown with the Bears. And when I say big NFC showdown, I mean showdown of teams who are fighting for that number 8 spot in the NFC.
Yeah. But yeah, we'll know a lot more about this Bears team too after they play on Sunday Night Football. This, like we said before, this is before the Bears take the field against the Packers. This is our immediate reaction after the Seahawks drop the game to the Broncos. So throughout the week, we'll know more about the Bears. We'll know, you know, who's healthy, who's injured from their team. We'll have more clarity on our guys' situation. And so that's, to me, it's enough reason to keep tuning in to this Locked On Seahawks podcast.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
I agree.
And so we want to thank you guys for listening to the show, especially after such a tough loss where the team could have won. I know you may be down in your spirits, and we sure as hell didn't do a whole lot to lift them up in this podcast. But
honestly, I feel like the vibe around this game is we lost by 40 to the Rams week one. We lost by 3 in Denver week one.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay. It's
yeah,
be okay.
Yeah, if you're listening to
Grant, still thinks his team's gonna go 9-7. I think, you know, like, hey, respect to Grant.
When you're in a deeper, darker place about the team, you can take these losses a little bit better than a little more optimistic guy like me. But yeah, I think that if you're a fan of this podcast, you're a fan of the Seahawks, and you're familiar with the early season woes surrounding this team. And so this is just another notch on the belt when it comes to early season struggles for the Seahawks.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. So, yeah, thank you guys for listening. Leave a review on iTunes. Make sure it's 5 stars. We'd appreciate that. Reach out to us on Twitter. Let us know how you feel about the show, what we can do better, what we can keep doing that you like. Just let us know. And I think that does it. So, no, let's get ready. Let's move past this loss and get prepared for this game against the Bears on Monday Night Football. So, for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I am Grant Goldberg signing off.
And I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.